Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Michelle Malkin. She returns to talk with us about the Daniel Holtzclaw case, a policeman from Oklahoma, and this is an update. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us again. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time, Jerry. Much appreciated.
Sure. For Vocal Point, I'm Jerry Newcomb. Now, here's the deal. For those who haven't heard the previous broadcast or whatever, could you just tell us in just a couple of sentences about the Holtzclaw case, and then we'll get new information from you?
Sure. Just as a summary, Daniel Holtzclaw is a former Oklahoma City Police Department officer who was accused in 2014 of a number of very horrible-sounding sexual assault allegations. He went to trial in 2015, which was the summer of Ferguson, Missouri. There was a lot of social agitation against police officers and an undeniable racial component, unfortunately, that he was wrapped up in. Daniel himself is half Japanese. His mom is from Japan. His father is a law enforcement officer and military veteran from Enid, Oklahoma. He is one of three multiracial, biracial children of the Holtzclaw family and a dedicated police officer, had been on the force for 3 years until this terrible nightmare befell him. And I think that the social and political context is important because a lot of people don't understand how this man could be innocent of all of the charges that were leveled against him. But I believe that the social justice climate and a literal mob that had hijacked his courtroom and trial were in large part how this nightmare cascaded. I think that there was a political drive, almost a witch hunt, to feed this mob mentality, this anti-police mentality that had caught hold in the last years and months of the Obama administration. And I think that that confirmation bias and this drive, this witch hunt drive, blinded the police detectives that were in charge of the case, and certainly a politically motivated prosecutor and police chief who threw Daniel under the bus months and months before his trial even commenced. In the end, he was convicted of 18 of 36 of these charges and has been behind bars now for more than a year, almost a year and a half, and was sentenced to a whopping 263 years in jail. My investigation over the past year and a two-part series that I produced and we aired on CRTV.com in December brought a lot of new information to light that is finally breaking the wall of silence that has surrounded much of the Oklahoma City media, and that leads us up to a lot of very eye-opening and bombshell legal developments that have happened in the last month or so.
Okay, your two-part investigative series, which, by the way, is excellent, you showed it to a focus group of sorts, so you showed it to a live TV audience. I assume those were people from Oklahoma, and then you asked people, well, tell us what happened about the audience reaction to the question you asked after watching it.
Yes, in December of 2016, which marks the one-year anniversary of the verdict in Daniel's trial, we went to Enid, Oklahoma. That is Daniel's hometown, and I suppose some might argue that they would be biased in favor of Daniel, but the fact is that not a lot of people knew the real facts of the case. So it was a sort of focus group, because a lot of people went in thinking that he was guilty. Many people were undecided, and obviously there was a small contingent of Daniel's supporters, his close friends and family, who know the truth because they know the man, his integrity, his character, and his family. And we showed the entire two-part series, and at the end I asked folks, did they think that Daniel deserved a retrial? Did they think that the Oklahoma media needed to investigate more? And we have video of, every last hand being raised when I asked how many of you think that Daniel deserves a retrial or that he was innocent. And I think it was an incredible moment for the family to see that. Certainly was a breakthrough, I think, up to that point where so many people have determined that Daniel was a monster, a racist, a serial predator, that they had bought the prosecutor's line in the social justice narrative hook, line, and sinker when there were so many facts, so many red flags, and a mountain of reasonable doubt in the case that people had been blinded to.
And that was the whole key right there, that phrase, reasonable doubt. And that's the key, of course, in any kind of trial. Now, I have a news item here from just last month, June 2017, and it's from the Fox affiliate, or Fox 25, out of Oklahoma City, KOKH. And they talk about Daniel's appeal, and here's what it says. The Oklahoma Attorney General's office is fighting to keep Holtzclaw in prison as he appeals his sex crimes convictions. The agency filed a motion recently under seal, which is not the normal way they would do it. According to the limited court's records available online, attorneys believe the material is exempt from public disclosure by Oklahoma City. While filing information under seal is not unheard of in criminal cases, it's not necessarily common in criminal appeals. However, making matters more uncommon, the state's attorneys and the judges on the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals are withholding the information from the defense attorneys representing Holtzclaw on his appeal. The article, by the way, goes on to say that both the constitutions of the United States and the state of Oklahoma guarantee the public's right to know, and the courts and the public access to the judicial or justice process. But what's fascinating about this story is that apparently Holtzclaw's own attorneys are being withheld, key information as they're working on his appeal. Your comments?
Yes, it's very curious, and I first reported on a secret motion that was filed by the state attorney general in Oklahoma in early May. It got no attention from the Oklahoma media, even though all sorts of legal observers inside and outside Oklahoma have told me that it is highly unusual. What happened was that the Court of Criminal Appeals, which is considering Daniel's direct appeal, which was filed in February, remanded this secret issue back to the trial judge, Timothy Henderson. And then on June 26th and 27th, Henderson held these secret hearings that finally got attention of the local media in Oklahoma City. Phil Cross is one of those reporters who was able to file a public information request, getting the surveillance video, which revealed some of the identities of the people who were at this secret hearing. And as you mentioned, Jerry, Daniel's own attorneys, who are public defenders from the Oklahoma Indigent Defense System, were not at that hearing. Daniel has been left in the dark about the nature of the secret evidence, the secret motion that was filed by the Attorney General, and obviously whatever it was that was discussed over these 2 days of hearings. But we get a clue as to the nature of the secret hearings because the surveillance video revealed that the prosecutors were involved in these secret hearings, as well as a representative from the state attorney general's office and a civil attorney for the city of Oklahoma City who handles civil litigation. Most notably, the key attendee at the secret hearing was a man named Campbell Ruddock, who is the crime lab supervisor at the Oklahoma City Police Department. Of course, he would be involved in the handling and testing and chain of custody of any DNA or other forensic evidence that was involved in Daniel's case. This, of course, goes back to some of the key revelations that I reported in my two-part series and subsequent reporting that I've done for my syndicated column for Creators Syndicate, as well as my blog and Conservative Review that hones in on the misstatements and falsehoods that were told by the crime lab analyst who testified in Daniel's trial, Elaine Taylor, whose supervisor would be Campbell Ruddock, as well as falsehoods that were told by Galen Gigger that had a huge influence on the jury, in which he mischaracterized the sole piece of indirect forensic evidence in Daniel's case. That would be the skin cell DNA on Daniel's pants that we've talked about previously,
yes.
Jerry.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's almost as if the forces are lining up where you have those in charge in Oklahoma are, you know, pleased with the guilty verdict and they want to keep it that way. But then as more and more voters within Oklahoma hear the kind of facts that you're uncovering and other sources as well, as I guess, they're starting to think, well, wait a minute, maybe injustice was done to this guy.
Yes, I hope so. And I think a couple of things are key to point out here. First of all, this is not the only time that Oklahoma's crime lab has come under scrutiny, if in fact this is at the heart of these secret hearings, which it appears to be. I wrote a syndicated column for Creator Syndicate that is on my website and on Creator's website about the crisis in America's crime labs. And in the early 2000s, there was a police chemist named Joyce Gilchrist, infamous in the forensic science community, who fabricated, lied about, and misplaced forensic evidence over the course of several years, and was supposed to have ushered in a series of reforms in the Oklahoma City Police Department's crime lab. She was in cahoots with an assistant district attorney, Bob Macy, and there were many, if not dozens, of innocent people who were put behind bars as a result of her unethical behavior and misconduct. There may have even been death row inmates who were unjustly executed as a result of her systemic corruption. And this is something that has happened in crime labs across the country. Junk science endangers lives, and forensic junk science in the hands of these overzealous prosecutors and ignorant police officials and reckless experts absolutely threatens liberty. So one of the local DNA experts who's gone on to national fame and national expertise, Brent Turvey, actually commented to Phil Cross and made this connection between the Joyce Gilchrist matter and what might be happening behind closed doors with these secret hearings in Daniel's case.
Huh. Tell us a little bit about the research of this one private investigator that I guess you've interviewed a few times, Brian Bates.
Yes, Brian Bates is the original private investigator for Daniel's defense team who, ever since the verdict and sentencing, has volunteered his time to expose as many facts as possible that have been buried about Daniel's case. He's a real hero in this matter because he has not given up in his quest for justice for Daniel. And he has the most important clearinghouse of information in Daniel's case at HoltzClawTrial.com. And he's got a whole new page with a chronology about the secret hearings. More importantly, of course, he's looked at every aspect of this case, and it's clear from my interviews with him and all the work that he has done that the public has been absolutely left in the dark about Daniel's innocence and how he was railroaded by police due to a presumption of guilt. We've talked about burden of proof, and what happened was the whole presumption of innocence until proven guilty has been turned on its head in this case. The incompetent police work. Brian did something that was so important in that he posted the entire two-hour interrogation of Daniel by the bumbling police detectives, Kim Davis and Rocky Gregory. And there are so many professionals, I have to tell you, Jerry, who have come forward to me and ripped apart every aspect, minute by minute, of how that interrogation was conducted. Any fair-minded person who sits through the whole entire two-hour interrogation cannot come away with anything but a mountain of reasonable doubt. And in my case, it was one of those things that just turned a light on to my head about how everything I'd been told about Daniel's case was wrong, because the way Daniel acted, this was, you have to think about this, this was just literally hours after these alleged assaults occurred, the first one on June 18th, 2014, involving a woman who's now become famous, Janie Liggins, who is suing Daniel, along with a number of the other accusers for high-dollar civil lawsuits, being represented by Benjamin Crump, you know, our version of Al Sharpton of 2017. And Daniel is straightforward. He volunteers for every kind of DNA test. He is confronted with all sorts of false information by these detectives and remains as open and honest and consistent in everything that he said, compared to Janie Liggins, whose accounts have been ever-changing and amorphous, self-contradictory, and not borne out by a single test, a forensic test or confirmatory test, whereas everything that Daniel has said has been borne out by those tests.
Well, Michelle, we're out of time. Thank you again so much for joining us. MichelleMalkin.com, and we'll also link to your special series on Daniel. Keep up the great work. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Jerry.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.